We'll call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. We do have first item of business. We have minutes from March 24th of 2017. Representative Barr, have you had a chance to read those over?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have, and I move the minutes.
All right, we have the minutes before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I would like to point out it is Farmers Union Day on the Hill. We have, we have a number of folks here today, and I think you're going to have your Tom Peterson. Is Tom going to be testifying as well? Oh, you're going to be testifying. Okay, excellent. That's even better. That's even better. So, and I'd also like to mention it's Multiple Sclerosis Day on the Hill, too. So if you see our folks, we have folks decked out in orange. So welcome to them as well. We do have two bills up, both dealing with the same thing, the RFA. Representative Miller will go ahead and move House File 2882 to put it before us. Representative Miller, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. It's a pleasure being before all of you today with the start of the new year with a bipartisan bill. And this is brought forward by the governor's office, supported by the department, and I'm honored to bring it. A little bit of background, it's a rural finance authority, and the Department of Agriculture is requesting authorization to sell general obligation bonds to $20 million, and the proceeds of those bond sales will be used to support the loan programs administered through the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. Just a real quick update on people. We brought this bill forward last year as a standalone. We had to do it early because there's a little bit of an urgency to it since the previous year the general bonding bill had failed. And this is money. This has been going since 1986. It came out of the farm crisis, and it was just a way to stabilize loans in agriculture. And last year, the pool was running short, and they needed more money, and we're coming back this year because the program is working well, and it's short again. Now, one thing to understand about this is that this is money that goes through general obligation bonds, easy for me to say. But when these loans are administered, the loan payback goes to paying off those bonds. So under the purest of intentions, there is zero impact on the taxpayer. Since 1986, there's been a total of 3,074 loans issued for a total of $249 million. The risk to the state is if a loan becomes bad. And since 1986, loan losses have been for $555,707 on 21 loans for a .002 loss ratio. So this is a pretty good investment. I really support this because it is a program that has worked over many years. It has kind of stood the test of time. It has not been tampered with. It has not been expanded. It has been changed. And so I'm going to ask you're not Whitney. I turned.
Never have been.
No. So, but anyway, I don't want to take everything from her. I'd like Whitney to be able to go and say what you want to say about the RFA amendment.
Yeah, and Representative Miller, I also asked Representative Sundin to go ahead
Absolutely.
And take a seat up there as well, because the second bill is very similar. We're just discussing the dollar amount. So, Ms. Place, please, you know the routine. If you state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitney Place. I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2882 and House File 3050. Thank you so much to Representative Miller and Representative Sundin for carrying these bills this session. This session, Governor Dayton is requesting bond authorization totaling $20 million to fund loan programs administered by the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. Last session, as Representative Miller mentioned, $35 million was issued in bonds to be used for RFA loan programs. This request was estimated to last 3 years based on a 5-year average of loan use. And as of last week, $27.46 million of that $35 has been utilized. The Rural Finance Authority partners with over 400 local lenders to provide affordable credit to eligible farmers. The RFA shares a portion of the risk of lending loans, and farmers utilizing these loan programs have access to financing at lower interest rates. The RFA offers loans for beginning farmers, agricultural improvement projects, farms that need to restructure their finances, and livestock expansion projects. As Representative Miller stated, the RFA loan programs are user financed. The state repays the bonds with repayments from the loan programs. So this past year, the use of funds dramatically increased. By the end of session, the authorized $35 million will entirely be allocated out to loans. This increased use could be for a number of reasons. First, a renewed interest among young people entering into agriculture. 75% of the loans allocated this past year have been for beginning farmer loans. As Federal Reserve interest rates continue to tick upward, beginning farmers have better options, including lower interest rates utilizing RFA loans. Next, the current farm economy has led farmers to seek assistance. Many agricultural organizations are appointing farmers for these programs and are encouraging more banks to utilize the program to manage their risk. The restructured loan program has been critical to provide farmers under financial pressure with cash flow, allowing them to stay in business during this downturn in prices. Finally, one of the bright spots in agriculture right now is that livestock production is profitable. The livestock expansion loan program is an opportunity for farmers to expand and to add value to their crop production and create a profitable venture. The Rural Finance Authority is an effective tool for assisting farmers with financing options, and we thank this committee very much for your continued support of these important programs.
Ms. Place, we do have a question. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Place. With the knowledge, I'm sure there are fluctuations. Generally, what is the interest rate that is repaid?
Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, members, it varies among the programs. The beginning farmer program is at 3%. The livestock expansion program is at 3.5%. And so what happens is the RFA takes about 45% of the risk, and then the bank takes the other 55%. So if the bank's at like 5% and we're at 3%, that can lower the interest rate down for the farmer.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Place, just curious, and I know we have a couple amendments here dealing with the amount that is requested to go into this, but just curious, why is the department's request only $20 million? Last year we had 35. Looks like we've spent $27.5 million so far of that 35. So if you can just talk about that a little bit.
Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, The $20 million request was made this fall, and we had not anticipated how much use there would be in the program.
Representative Lean? No? Other questions from members? Okay. Seeing no other questions. Representative Sundin, would you like to say a few comments? I know your bill's up next, and it basically goes down the line of the questioning from Representative Lean. Would you like to add some comments at this time?
Representative Certainly. Sundin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It'll shorten my testimony considerably when my bill is up. But we can see the need for this, and I'd like to stress the importance of something like this. If this loan program was in place back in 1965, quite possibly we would have been able to survive as dairy farmers a little bit longer and not sell the herd. It was a tragic day for our family, and if we can avoid that tragedy for other farming families and make certain that the food hits our table in this great state, all the better. If it's a matter of $15 million, so be it. You know, we're all friends here, and $15 million here and $15 million there. It's, you know, sooner or later it's going to add up to big money, but this is a good investment for Minnesota farmers.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. So, Ms. Place, I guess I do have a question. Was it right? Did you say that we're using about $2 million per month? Is that what's being invested currently?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yeah. The average volume of loans encumbered per month this past year has been $2,034,360.
Okay, so then, Ms. Place, with the governor's recommendation at $20 million And currently there's a fund balance of about $7 million. Is that accurate? So, Ms. Place, would the administration or would the department be comfortable that with the $20 million plus the fund balance, would that be adequate, or do you see a need for more?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would all always like to have more, but we would really like to make sure that we can sustain the program at least until the next legislative session.
Yeah, and Ms. Place, I know that Chair Erdahl is going to be putting together a bonding bill, and there's quite a few requests out there, probably more than what the dollar amount's going to be. And I believe the department's going to be coming forward with a proposal for additional bonding requests. And so I guess this committee, we're trying to get as close to the appropriate number as we can so that we're not taking money, so that we can fulfill our obligation here, of course, but that we're not taken away from some other department requests or others. And so that's where we're trying to figure out what the appropriate number would be. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is probably a good time to punctuate that this is general obligation bonds, but they are paid back through this loan program. And with the exception of that very small percentage loss since 1986, this has been the bonds are just basically directly paid off. So when we're talking about $20 million, we're talking about $30 million. This is really with the intention to say how much is necessary to keep the program moving forward at a reasonable and responsible rate, because we could put $100 million in, but that would affect things with paying interest on bonding and stuff like that. We could put in less, but then we'd be having to ask more often. So I guess what I would really want to make sure that we do is, as I said, this, what's unique about this is that we have, you know, this was very cleared out last year because we had to do it as a standalone bill. This is very bipartisan, and this is something that we want to make sure that we move forward and accomplish with all things considered. So if the governor, what the governor wants and what the department wants, I just want to make sure that we clarify when we move forward how much it is that they think is satisfactory, and I'll be supporting it.
Thank you, Representative Miller. We do have a question. Chair Anderson. Representative Chair Anderson.
Question to you, is the path of this bill from here to the Capital Investment Committee?
Well, Chair Anderson, what my intent was going to be, similar to what we've done in the past, we actually hold it in the committee and then we write a recommendation to the chairman of the Capital Investment Committee.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this is a very important piece of legislation we're working on right now. We all understand what's happening in the ag economy, and I think we should really nail down what that number is that the Agriculture Department wants and support that. But I'd like to zero in a little bit more on what the actual need is to get us through this year and into next session again. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Vobel, or just the conversation of the need, this is a very important program, and I really appreciate it being there. But I'm wondering, as agriculture finances for the next year, is there, maybe not so much with animal, but maybe more crop, but there's a finance time that many farmers work on their books this time of year. I'm wondering, is there a larger bubble in the next 3 months or the last 3 months than there will be going forward as we get towards spring? Wondered if that need is greater now than it will be in the future.
Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I just looked to the audience, and my staff is saying yes, in the spring. we face a much higher volume. So that $2 million is an average across the whole year, but we do expect more to be coming in.
Representative Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to point out the fact that we are seeing a transition. Some of us are getting old enough to look at retirement, and we have a lot of young new farmers coming toward agriculture, which is a important issue and a great blessing. So I too will echo Chair Anderson's support of, we need to make sure we get the number right to sustain what we need, but certainly don't want to go overboard because we have other things to do too. So Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm part of the bipartisan part of this bill. I was glad to sign on to Representative Miller's bill, but I'm also the author of one of the amendments, and it reflects what I've learned in lately, and it comes from conversations. We all have people we depend on and learn from. I learned from a couple of gentlemen in my district. One is a banker in St. Peter, and another is a farm manager throughout southern Minnesota and Iowa. They both expressed to me some real concerns about it. I'm always checking in, how are we doing financially? And understand, I'm in a pretty stable part of the state, and they are expressing newer concerns, growing concerns about the financial stability of in a relatively stable area. My question is the department, and that would suggest to me that just leaning on last year's numbers might not tell us, we're talking about next year's numbers are really what are valid. And so it seems to me we've got to think ahead as opposed to only looking backwards. And my question for the department is, are you hearing the same thing that I'm hearing in Minnesota and a rising need for these sorts of loans?
Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I think with rising interest rates, our programs will become even more valuable to the agricultural community. And I think, you know, in the past, we've been able to make our recommendations based on an average of, you know, the past 5 years. I think this year we kind of entered into a new era, I guess, of determining how much of the funds is needed. And so we might have to, you know, request them more frequently just to determine, you know, how much use there actually is per year.
Thank you. Representative Johnson. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Place, I just want some clarification. We talked about this being, this last year this went through as a standalone bill, and this year's possible inclusion in a bonding bill. When would these bonds actually be sold? Because if it's part of the bonding bill, wouldn't it be in the fall time frame? And is that, would that work with this program, or would the funds be needed sooner?
Ms. Place?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my staff is saying that they're sold in the fall and that we could make it. We do have $7 million left, and we think that'll sustain us till the end of session. We think that'll sustain us till the end of session. I know last year it did go as a standalone. We would be supportive of that, but however the bonding committee works it out, I think we can work with.
Okay. Representative Juergens.
Well, getting to the end of session and getting to September are two different things, I hope. Hopefully we're not in session in September. So I just wanted to raise that question of whether or not this should be included as a standalone or as part of an omnibus bill or rather bonding bill or separately.
Duly noted, the chairman stepped out, chairman of the bonding capital investment committee. That'd be a question there too. So.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Miller.
I guess, Mr. Chair and committee, I'd like to add to this that need to remind everyone that the department, which has this all well in hand, has said this is how they'd like to proceed. And so without new information, we're probably doing fine just the way we're at because this is what the department has. So if there is new information that comes out this spring, we certainly can address it at a further note. One reason why you're holding it in the committee at this time.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just make some observations here while listening in that it seems like the $20 million is appropriate right now if they still have the $7 million because that gets us, you know, the carryover is going to get us back up there, if I'm hearing it right. And one thing that kind of is rattling around in my head here is this is such a successful program. And I think it might be successful because we scrutinize the loans and make sure that that when we're giving the loans almost like a bank, that we're assured that the projects are going to move forward. And if we get too big of a pot, are we going to try to get rid of the money, or will the agency try to get rid of the money and maybe not scrutinize as much? So right now it looks like we're on track with this. So,
thank you, Representative Green. Would you like to comment on that or no? Okay. Any other questions for the testifiers? Yes, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we are over the $20 million right now. So I guess I'm in the camp that says $35 million. I think that we should go for the amount that clearly is what the need is as recognized this year. And thanks to Representative Pearson and others, having the beginning farmer incentive has really opened the door to, and hopefully we'll see more and more of that. And as Representative Keel was describing, you know, as people are retiring, we're going to need to have more people want to enter into farming and agriculture producing, and hopefully we do see the use of this. So I'm hopeful that we can go for as much as we think we're going to need, which is $35 million, and it sounds like potentially there could be a need for more. But I would say that that's how I would like to see us proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So we do have an amendment. Representative Miller, is that your amendment?
That would be my amendment.
The A2?
Yep.
Would you like to move it at this time, or would you like to take more testimony?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move it at this time.
All right. Representative Miller moves the A2 amendment. I believe everybody has that in front of them. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Any discussion? And basically, Representative Poppy, this is bringing it up to that $35 million mark. And I think what I've gathered through this testimony here, everybody's on board with the program, bipartisanly on board with the program. What I would like to have is, before we move this amendment, have the department, if you would, Ms. Place, if you would go back and visit, because I know Representative Miller brought forth what the governor's recommendation was. And everybody is weighing in, I think, understanding what the need or the concerns are. And if the department could take another look at this, visit with the governor, and come back and make another recommendation. We are going to hold this in the committee, and then we're going to make recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee, okay? But we do have the A2 amendment in front of us. Any questions or comments to the A2 amendment? Hearing none, we'll bring it to a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. We have the bill in the shape that the author wants it now. Do you have any other comments?
No comments. All right. Mr. Chair, just ask for your support.
All right. Is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against this bill? Welcome to the committee. You're familiar with the routine. If you'd state your name, who you represent for the record, and proceed, please.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee members. Gary Wordish, president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm not going to rehash a lot what's done. I just appreciate your support of moving it up to $35 million. I sit on the Rural Finance Authority Board, and last year, a year ago at this time, or December 31st, a year ago, we were out of money. We weren't able to take out. We took applications, but we couldn't process anything. The last of the legislature, that was the first piece that you did when you come into session. I think in the first week or two, you passed unanimous support from the House and Senate. I don't believe anybody voted against it. I know there were some concerns at passing a standalone Rural Finance Authority Board, but it was been mentioned here earlier. I'd encourage you to take a look at that again, pass it as a standalone bonding, keep it out of the bonding bill. The support is well needed. And yesterday, Commissioner Woolman testified before the Joint Ags or the Senate Ag Committees, and he stated that there were 65% of the farmers, maybe I got that wrong, I think 75% of the farmers were over 65 years and older, and less than 35, or, you know, the balance were less than 35 years old. So Representative Keel mentioned some of us are getting older, going to be looking at retiring, and there's a need for this type of program. Last year, you passed the Beginnings Farmers Tax Credit. So this, you know, this could dovetail very well with that program, too, get that off the ground. And anything we can do to get more farmers and transfer ownership to younger farms on the farm is a good thing. And I just appreciate your support, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wordish, you mentioned you're on the committee, so you'd be a good person to ask. We all understand the challenges of beginning farmers, but also those that are already in the game farming and finding that the margins just don't come together to pay the bills. Is this program effective for a farmer trying to restructure and get more working capital, or is there something else that you think would be better to help the farmers kind of weather this economic crisis here and stay on the farm? And what can we do as a state to help those trying to stay on the farm?
Well, this program is set up, you got to follow the guidelines. It's set up more to the beginning type farmers, but it definitely will help those. It does. We do have a restructuring program in place. So that anybody that meets the qualifications, it definitely is a step. Somebody that's in the well-established farmer in the 50 to 60 years old, it might not work for them. But, this for the people that it is set up for, it will work very well.
Jerry Anderson?
Oh, thanks again, Mr. Chair. We know that especially dairy people right now are having a hard time making ends meet and looking at ways to try to somehow help them. But it sounds as if this is more of a younger farmer program and not really set up to help somebody who's been on the farm for years trying to make it through.
Yeah, I don't think there's not an age requirement. And I don't remember the math over there to give me us the better, but as long as you fit the definitions, I don't think there's an age requirement.
Chair Anderson, any other questions, comments for the testifier?
Chairman, or
Mr. Warbush.
Mr. Anderson mentioned, or Representative Anderson, dairy. Dairy is obviously the one that is really in a bind now. And, even some of the established dairies, if there's a way that they can transfer some of that to a family member or somebody else, or that could help get them, it might make a difference and let them weather the storm too.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Warbush, for your testimony. Is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against? Please, come on down. Please, state your name for the record.
Ted Jostock.
Welcome.
Retired dairy farmer from Rochester, Minnesota. I guess I'm looking at this in pieces, too. And it's quite dear to our family. 4 years ago, I believe it was, we retired from dairying, and I'm on the downhill side of the people we're talking about, thinking about retiring. We do have a son and a daughter-in-law that are very interested in taking over the future of farming. And right now we have hogs and beef cattle after retiring from dairy. But we had to restructure our loan, my wife and I did. And I would appreciate you guys being supportive of all of this because it is a one step to the next step, especially our son, being a beginner farmer coming up here. I'm starting to get into it, but the point of what I was going to say was we went and got the RFA loan and got it approved, and I believe that's 45-55%, and we went to our local lender. And our local lender matched, when we restructured, matched that RFA loan interest rate. And we thought that was very wonderful of them to do that. So I wanted to just let you folks know how big this picture is. And then now with us wanting to go on the downhill side of it and let our son take his steps, I would appreciate the future of what you guys are doing. And I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I apologize I wasn't on the agenda, but I had to get it off my chest if I could.
Yeah. Powerful testimony. Thank you. Thank you. Would anybody else like to testify for or against? Seeing none. Any closing comments? One more time. Chair Miller. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
So then we're going to hold over. House File 2882 will be held over. As amended. Thank you. Representative Sundin, you move House File 3050. We have the bill before us. Any comments?
What he said. just to sweeten the deal, I did bring some treats in here to get this going. I don't know where they ended up, but let's get those circulated if we can. I think they're made out of Minnesota flour and Minnesota milk and sugar from the great northwest part of the state. So I hope everybody appreciates that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I really appreciate the comments from Representative Keel on transitioning over, and then from the last testifier as well, transitioning our farming culture to the next generation. And it is very important. If we can do that effectively and make this happen, you know, we've actually satisfied our responsibilities in this committee. As to the increase in the number, I think it is wise of the chair to hold both of these bills over until there's some more analysis on this and keep our options open. I really appreciate that. And so I agreed to vote for Representative Miller's bill and support it, and he agreed to support mine as well. So there's a whole lot of kumbaya in the room, and I think that's attributable to the reasonable attitude of the chair. So I hope everybody can see clear to support 3050 and keep our options open. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Any other comments or questions to the author? No. And this is the very similar language, but I need to ask, is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against this bill? Same. All right. Seeing none. So House File 3050 will be held over. Thank you, Representative Sundin.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to take this moment. Now we do have a new page now that everybody's here. Gail, is that? Yeah. Yeah. Gail just gives a wave. So Gail's new here this year with our committee. So thank you, Gail, for all that you do. And then I'd also like to take this time, now that he just took a bite of the treats that are being passed around, we do have a new member on this committee, Representative Munson. We'll give you a chance there to, if you'd just like to, perfect timing. See, this is how we haze the freshmen.
That's right.
So, now, if you just want to give a short introduction about the district that you represent.
Yeah, my name is Jeremy Munson. I represent District 23B, which is parts of Waseca, Le Sueur, Watonwan, and Blue Earth County, southern Minnesota. It's very rural, our largest towns, less than 5,000 people, and very strong agricultural roots. My wife's family's farmed there for, we figured, six generations. So I'm very familiar with farming. I'm also familiar with the barriers of getting into farming. Just because of the high costs. So that was important to me. And thank you.
Welcome. We're happy to have you. All right, Representative Clark, are you ready?
I am.
Representative Clark moves House File 2457. We have the bill before us. Representative Clark, you do have there's a couple of amendments. Are those yours?
Yes, there's two amendments, and I'll claim both of them.
All right. Would you like to move those first?
Yes. Get to the Chairman, if we could do that. They're technical amendments. One clarifies that this is a pilot project, and the second one makes the date of the appropriation correct, changes it to the year that it should be, which is 2018.
So both technical amendments. Representative Clark moves the A1 amendment first. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Clark will move the A2 amendment. Any further discussion on the A2 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Clark, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is a bill I'm just really enjoying bringing forward because it's one of the opportunities I have to bring together rural and urban inner city issues and show that we can really all work together across some of those differences and distinctions. I was listening one day when AURI was presenting here in the committee, and we heard about a new soy-based sealant that can be used on roads and streets and so on. was very impressed with what it did in terms of extending the life of those surfaces. And I thought, wow, we should be doing this in some of our inner city streets because we have a lot of breaking up asphalt and some cement and so on. And I live just blocks from an asphalt plant, and I would love to see a reduction in that type of product being put out there. It's, it really is a polluter for our neighborhood. So in talking with the folks from AURI, we came up with this bill, and I'm going to let the folks who know so well how this sealant, new sealant, is in the research stage, but it's got quite a good track record from what I can tell in Hutchinson and a few other places in greater Minnesota. So I'm going to just ask them to talk a little bit more about it, but you can see what we do here is we ask that the money be appropriated to AURI to provide this sealant on in an area, and it's designating an area, actually happens to be in my district, that has a lot of problems with air pollution and a disproportionate burden of some environmental health issues. So this will, we hope, contribute to, again, to the clean air in that area. And so I guess I'm going to ask you, do you want to go first, Mr. Van Dyke? Why don't you explain the product and what you found out so far and why you think it would work, you know, potentially for the inner city.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and who you represent and begin.
I'm Gary Van Dyke, and I'm with Bargain Incorporated out of Mountain Lake, Minnesota. And so we're a distributor, applicator to put this product down. We've been doing this for over 6 years with this product. We've been in the asphalt preserving business for 38 years. And so we found this product because it's a green-friendly product, and there is not a lot of true oil products out there anymore for the asphalt. And so what this product does is it's made in Baldwin, Missouri, and it's made out of green-friendly products. It's got soy oil, potato extract, citrus oils in it, and there's 9 different polymers in this product. And it goes in 3/4 of an inch to 1.25 inches into your pavement. And so it's a clear sealer. It doesn't cover up your striping, and it only dulls your striping by 2%. So if you've got a road that's got good striping on it, you can leave it. And it will actually help hold the striping down when it's applied so that striping can last longer. We've seen some results with that. We've done over 300 different projects in the state over the last 6 years. County roads, city streets. Hutchinson's probably been one of our longest. He experimented with it in the very first in like 2010, right in there. And he's run some tests on it, and we've been seeing some good results with it. So I guess.
My name is John Olson, and I'm the Public Works Manager for the City of Hutchinson. And we have been using this. Actually, we started with a research project through the University of Minnesota and the Local Road Research Board, and we put this material down. And the best way to describe what you see is the product is a liquid product. It comes in, and it's applied by a spray truck with spray bar in the back of the truck. It's put down. It's about 30 minutes. You can be on the road again with traffic without any problem. And the material stays kind of wet-looking for roughly 2 weeks. And then after about a couple weeks, it dries out, and you don't even know anybody was there. But the polymers are in the top layer of the asphalt, which helps with cracking, to control cracking. And cracking is what causes the water to get in and causes the potholes and all kinds of other problems. So we've found that to be the case. We have one road in particular that we're really taking a look at and making sure that it's doing what it's supposed to do, and it does. We redid this road in 2009, put our first application of the material on in 2012, and we put a second application on last year. You know, for a road that's 11 years old, it looks just about brand new. And some of the cracking at the utility structures in the road, like manholes and cup valves and things like that, it started. We filled them. We treated the road. They haven't expanded since. So we've had very good success with that, and Our plan is to continue utilizing it on our newer asphalt. Once the project's done, to hit it right away within the first couple years after we're done. And we feel like that's a very value-added product. There's a pretty distinct odor, so it's good to let folks know about that. There's a pretty distinct odor when you first put it down, but that's gone within roughly 24 hours. And then about 2 weeks later, nobody will ever know anyone was there. So very, very good luck with that. I've talked to I've let the residents know what it's going to do and why we're using it, and we've gotten great support. Again, because it's a ag product that, we produce soybeans in Minnesota. We all drove by soybean oil on our fields on the way here, covered with snow. But so it's a good deal for the farmers too. So.
All right, we do have a couple of questions, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Olson. First of all, where did you learn everything you needed to know about American history?
Everybody in the room called you Chair Erdahl. I still have to call you Mr. Erdahl. He was my social studies teacher in high school. So.
We're so sorry. Representative Erdahl.
Yes, and when I call you Mr. Olson. But anyway, he was a fine student. I had the pleasure of being invited in and watching a demonstration at Hutchinson, a city that I share representation with Representative Grunhagen. And it looks impressive. Obviously, time will tell, but I was impressed with what I saw that day. And Mr. Van Dyke, how many other you don't have to list every, you mentioned 300, but can you give us some examples of other places where you've tested this?
Mr. Mann.
We have done, there's been some testing down in Omaha, Nebraska, a county down there around Omaha, Douglas County. They did a test that was just in here this last summer that we put down last year. Otherwise, what John's done has really been, a lot of it's been done in-house on his part, and that's kind of why there's a need for testing. It's kind of an invisible product, but we're seeing some real benefits with it, and it's very costly to test it. It costs to test an invisible product like that and see how deep it goes and stuff. There's some extra details that got to be taken to prove it and see it. And so, but we've done it for, you get into the city of Plymouth, we do it on all their bike trails, their new bike trails, what they paved last year, we do it on their new ones this year. And they've been doing that for 3 or 4 years now. Been impressed. Otherwise, West Metro, a lot of smaller towns on the west side of the metro have had it put down. We've done it for Chanhassen or Chaska this year. Victoria's got a pile of it out there. All the way out west to Hutchinson, Glencoe, little town of Plato. From one block to a few miles. And a lot of them are in the situation to watching it like John was doing at first, and seeing if it really does what it's supposed to do. And over the last 6 years, we've seen some results with cracks and interesting stuff. Norwood, Young America, we've seen some streets where water was penetrating them, lifting the street, and it lifted the street 4 inches, and that city public works director said that street's going to be all cracked up in the spring, and the frost came out last spring, and there was hardly any more cracks in it. He couldn't believe it. And that's what it does. It the polymers in that top inch and a quarter bond that street together and help make it stronger.
So. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you bring up putting on trails. I think that's an important thing. One of the main criticisms or problems that we have with our state trails is the maintenance and the cost that can fall back on local units of government. And if they're was considerably less maintenance because of this, I think that could make a big difference. But the question, Mr. Van Dyke, is if you are having these successes in the programs that you are doing these pilot programs, why do you keep doing pilots, and when are we going to move away from that so you're actually know, doing large jobs.
Who would like to take that? Mr. Olson? Or?
Yes, thank you. I think one of the things that we're working on right now, it will take it to the next level, and that's the work that AURI is doing along with. They're using the city of Hutchinson's experience as kind of a test tube for this material. One of the things that is a little bit slower and why it takes a little bit longer is because we do our evaluations of our pavement every 3 years, and so we get a kind of a snapshot of the condition of the city's bituminous roadways every 3 years, and we just recently finished that for the year of 2017. So now AURI is able to take some of the older information that we have from the previous three-year cycles and then compare it now to this year, this past year's, and they've been doing a great job at that, and I think the results that we see from AURI's efforts will kind of turn the corner and be able to, that information will be able to be shared with other engineers and other city public works folks to help them make the decision. So,
Chair Erdahl, follow-up?
Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, a couple questions are actually for AURI, if Mr. Scogin would be available.
Representative Miller, I can try, or I have scientist Dr. Gussie with us.
Oh, this won't be scientific. I'm not smart enough.
Thank
that,
you.
Just a couple quick questions. So this sounds great, by the way. I think this has real advantages in many different ways. And, of course, in agriculture, we'd always like to use soybeans in a more comprehensive way. So that's exciting. But in your study, when you do this pilot study, are you or is someone going to be working on how this works into the life of the pavement cost? I don't think that's its technical term. But, you know, we look at the cost of laying down pavement, how long it lasts. I know in transportation, I'm on the transportation committee, and we talk about this is the overall cost of using it. So this application is obviously an additive, which is totally fine, but it's going to increase in cost. But if it makes the pavement last longer, then that's an okay cost to incur. Are you going to be studying the overall costs of this being used on pavement as part of your study?
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, yes. I should, for the record, Dan Scogin, Government Relations Director for AURI. Yes, and, you know, the cost is somewhat offset because they won't be using a petroleum-based sealant. So you can take that one out of the equation when you're putting this one in. So there's a little bit of an offset there, and the economics will be in the report.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that that's part of it. And my second quick question is I haven't heard MnDOT in this yet. Is there going to be are you working with MnDOT on this? Are you going to be approaching them on this? Because let's just say this works great because it sounds like it's working great. Let's say it works great. This is going to be incorporated into policy, I would think, on road construction in the future. So in what ways are you working with MnDOT at this time or plan to in the future?
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, I'm going to defer to Jerry on that. I will just tell you that I know that we have had conversations with MnDOT. We have also had conversations with Deed about what it would take to create this product in Minnesota. So we're working on bringing the product to Minnesota, and Mr. Van Dyke, I think, has some information on their conversation with MnDOT.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Miller. MnDOT tends to look for some projects that have been done in the state before it goes down also. They do a pretty rigorous testing with it. We have put a little down for MnDOT up by Monticello on County Road 75 to check the skid resistance and stuff. That's what they were concerned about at first. And it doesn't change the skid rating. Actually, there's a few tests out there that help. It shows it kind of helps the skid rating. But we've got other products that are on the state level for crack sealant and stuff, and a lot of times when it gets used in different areas enough, then MnDOT starts looking at it. And we have been talking to Ed Johnson in research in MnDOT and stuff, and they look to some of our counties and cities where it's been applied. They start talking to them and ask the county road soup or the city street soup, how is it performing, what do you think of it? And then sometimes it kind of gets it sped up so that it gets on the state level. And I think like a project like this in Minneapolis can definitely help that out too.
Okay, great. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say comment that I'd certainly like to see MnDOT involved in this, and my other chair is not going to be real happy with this in the Transportation Committee, but I think that if this is the direction that it's going, that certainly Transportation should consider footing some of this bill as well.
And the Transportation Chair is a farmer.
Yes.
That always helps, right? So, Representative Juergens is on the list, right? That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember last year when the topic first came up, when I don't remember, Mr. Skogan, if it was you that was making the presentation of the different projects, and this was sort of in passing, and it caught the attention of many of us because it was intriguing. And I also was able to go out to Hutchinson and see it in place this past summer. And one of the things, I don't know if anybody's mentioned it today, but it's not just blacktop or bituminous, but also concrete as well. It's a sealant for concrete. And you touched a little bit on my question. You mentioned that you're working with Deed and possibly bringing production into Minnesota, because what I'm interested in is that's one side of it. Is there a possibility of production in the state? And then how do we know that Minnesota soybean growers are benefiting from this if the production is out of state right now?
Mr. Stoke.
Mr. Chair and the members, you know, a soybean is a soybean to URI, and we're tasked with adding value to agricultural products. And we don't ask where that soybean is grown, and we think that when soybeans are used, or corn or wheat or barley, it affects the grain bins around the upper Midwest. So I would be comfortable saying Minnesota soybeans are used in this product. And, you know, there's a lot of steps to get them to Minnesota to create that product here. Obviously, if they were here, we would see revenue streams that affect Minnesotans more readily. But it's good for soybean growers to have this kind of product being developed. And we're doing everything we can to encourage them to come to Minnesota.
Representative Juergens? No, that's all right. All right, we have Keel, Johnson, Poppy, and Green. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been really exciting to watch this develop, and I didn't get to get down to Hutchinson for the actual test. I was down there earlier. But I really appreciate AURI's efforts in this, and it looks like it's going to be very promising as we move forward. Hopefully, it will eventually be developed in Minnesota. What I wondered, and I don't know if anybody can answer this, and maybe Dr. Gossi can, but I'm wondering, have we gone farther north? I live, you know, far enough north that there's some differences in our roads. Does that affect the product?
Who would like to handle that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Keel, we have a test plot in Itasca County, the Grand Rapids area. Maybe Mr. Van Dyke?
We did some out towards the western part of the state into North Dakota and stuff too, so we definitely are in the northern climates. But in my territory, I'm one of six for Bargain that sells, and Grand Rapids is the farthest that I've went with the product so far. But they did do 2 miles on a stretch of new road outside of Grand Rapids, right up, butting up to St. Louis County, so they are definitely watching that because everybody in the business is trying to preserve their pavement longer so that they can bring the cost of construction down.
Representative Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my concern is what I really notice here in regards to roads is there's a lot of salt used here where up north there's very little salt in my district used, and majority of it is sand. And so I just wondered if there's a difference in that or how that looks for us. And I see Dr. Gossi. Sorry, Dr. Gossi and I know each other. We worship in the same church, and I see his children all the time. So anyway, very thankful for his research, and would like to hear what he has to say.
Right. Dr. Gossi, please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Gussie with the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. There are a number of questions I can help inform on, but starting first with Representative Keel's question. Early in the testing, remember the state of Minnesota is even a little bit later in coming to the usage of this product as it's been developed in Missouri. It's been used in the southern states, and your concerns are duly noted, as we understand our road conditions are significantly different than they see down there. And whether it be the freeze-thaw cycles, ice, significant plow, skid resistance, and the use of abrasives, and that's in our district, absolutely a concern with sands and et cetera. The product has been used internationally, Canada and Alberta, Regina, and other areas, and those are not in ARI's purview, but the product has been successfully deployed in Canada, as well as in the Middle East under temperature conditions. And seeing the returns, the note that goes with this is it's not a magic bullet. This doesn't fix the potholes that exist in roads. You spray the product on, the potholes aren't filled with this product. It's to extend the life of the road. And in speaking to the alternatives used, and Gary is certainly an expert in this, it's replacing the chip seals, the small stones that are placed on roads with the overlay of tar. Then they place stones, and the stones get in your grass, they get in the sewer systems, they get it in our drainage systems, they get all over the place. It's extending the life of the surface, delaying the use of these other alternatives. And then speaking to our Minnesota soybean impacts, Minnesota soybean is in their second year of sponsoring this project in Hutchinson. And seeing the benefit to their members is absolutely at the forefront of what they are interested in. They're a strong supporter of this project. They actually produced the flyer that's in front of you today. And I think we have strong support from leadership as well as the farmer committee members with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, and we're excited. And then the last is working with MnDOT. And I apologize if this is a long answer, but I think there's a number of questions I can inform to. Minnesota Department of Transportation is and continues to do great work for the state, and they have many priorities that they look into. We look to be a good partner, and so early on in the formation of AURI's work, we look to develop a research preservation team. And you're seeing two of the members here today. John Olson forming the basis of an excellent case study as an early adopter. We wanted to leverage the money as best as possible, whether it be state funds or they be the Minnesota Soybean Research Promotion Council. So we look at 1 year of study, and we're able to collect 6 years' worth of data. By looking back at the performance over the last 6 years, as stated, we're really leveraging our funds well. And then using those funds with Jerry and his team at Bargain, we have experts that have spent years using the alternatives to help us understanding if the impact is real. Working with public works departments in other cities across the state, as well as county officials and MnDOT, we continue to work with our university leadership and research partners to help inform what tests to do. Everyone knows that this probably won't work in their area because they're unique, because their roads fall apart for different reasons, and it's largely true. And this isn't a silver bullet in all cases, so we do a case study to understand the best uses, to inform that, yes, roads still fall apart. The best research in the world can't always tell you if that road's going to work. But we know as an aggregate, looking at a city's performance as an entire road network, we are making a positive impact. And that the observations, whether they're anecdotal or scientific, are adding up, that this is a positive thing for the state. And so we're excited to include MnDOT going forward, providing our information in a public setting to be reviewed, scrutinized, and I hope those hard questions come, and so that we can build the best position for the state's road infrastructure, because it's an enormous cost by all levels of government. And thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'll take any questions you have.
Thank you. Representative Keel, follow-up?
No.
All right.
Well, I'll make one comment.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank you. Members, I'm just really excited about this. I know there's a lot of work yet still, but I think it really has a lot of promise for not just preserving our roads, but for our growers and using a product that is very prolific in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Keel. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I want to compliment you for coming up with a really fine place to test at the city of Minneapolis. I think it's a good place to do it. I really do, for many reasons. The second thing, it brings to memory, though, testimony I heard in the Commerce Committee last year related to biodiesel, where the Metro Transit buses were also an excellent example where they're testing biodiesel in a very tough atmosphere, and they're demonstrating that it works very effective. I thought it was some of the most powerful testimony. And, of course, we know that biodiesel adds about 61 to 67 cents to the value of a bushel of soybeans. Think about that for a moment, folks. That's got real impact on every grower in the state of Minnesota right in their pocketbook when they need it. Which leads to my question, it's probably for Mr. Skogan. Has there been any analysis or estimates made of what would impact the impact on the price of soybeans would be if this product works and were extended to extensive use throughout the state?
Mr. Skogan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I have two wishes right now. I wish I had that number, and I wish these Minnesota soybean people were here because they could probably answer that. Corey Bennett was going to be here for Minnesota soybean today, and he got called away to another meeting. So I don't know what the answer. Let me try to find that for you and share it with you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see this as a win-win-win-win-win because I think certainly value-added agriculture, soy-based products, that's outstanding. I would say AURI research, this seems like a home run. Very much when we do research and development, and we're always wondering about how our investment is working out, and that's good. And this is a good example of that. Environment, certainly the air pollution reduction and other things. I think that's good. Economically, municipalities who are doing this or going to use this will benefit and see economic returns down the way. And I think it's also the win. Representative Karen Clark is an environmental justice champion. And this is it's just a great bill for her to bring forward. And I know she'll be retiring and we'll be not seeing her here after this session. And so I think it's just a win to be able to have her bring this forward and bring us all together on a product and initiative that I think we'll all fully and very enthusiastically support.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of straightforward questions for you. First of all, where is it? Maybe I missed it, but where is this manufactured at?
In Baldwin, Missouri.
Mr. Mandel.
Okay. Have you looked into, should this go, have you looked into manufacturing plant here in Minnesota where the soybeans are growing?
We'd like to take that. Mr. Van Dyke.
Yes, Mr. Chair and the committee. I know the AURI has talked with the manufacturer about this, and like you said, there's a lot of steps that would be involved there. And you never know what could happen down the road because, I mean, the guy is up there in age, and he's going to have to, and if this gets stepped up to another level, he might have to do something for production to produce as much as is needed. And so they're definitely, it's in the early stages yet, but it could, they're talking about it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, the follow-up on that is about 4 or 5 months ago we had a meeting in southern Minnesota where we invited DEED, MnDOT, and some of our other partners, Bargain was there and others, and just had a real straightforward conversation about how we would prefer this product to be made in Minnesota and that what it would take to get a processing plant here. So some information was shared back and forth, and I think those conversations are continuing.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a couple other questions, but I'm just going to stick on this for a while. We've actually lost some businesses, and we've had businesses be turned away by our permitting processes in Minnesota. Have you guys considered that, and do you have any advice as to how the state can help in that area?
Scogan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, that's why we included them in our initial conversation, deed, so that the owner of the company could lay out what barriers he saw. Whether or not they've worked out some of those issues, I don't know yet. It's a process that they're working through, anytime AURI has a conversation with someone outside the state of Minnesota, part of our conversation is encouraging them to come to Minnesota to do business. We are heavily supported by the legislature here. We understand that. It's been a wonderful partnership. And we know that we can go, after last year's session, when we changed our statute language a little bit, we can go and have conversations now with processors, with people who are producing the commodity in other states. But our conversation always includes, please come to Minnesota to do business.
Representative Green.
Yeah, just a couple more short ones. The other is, I was listening to where you've got your test roads, and it seems like most of them are in a metro or city environment. Do you have any in the rural areas as well, on like a county road?
Mr. Van Dyke.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and the committee. We did 2 miles in Sibley County, right by Belle Plaine, last year. We've got some up in Otter Tail County. That was actually on the news when they did that. We've got some out just on the western edge into North Dakota. We've got some for Sargent County, some miles there. But we've done a lot of small sections of county roads. I'd have to, like I say, over 300 different projects. There's a lot of towns involved in there too, but there's definitely a lot more counties than I can remember. And like I say, my district is the center part of the state. I've got 5 other salesmen that are running there in Iowa, North Dakota, some of South Dakota, all the way down to Nebraska. So there would be a lot of references out there. Itasca County has a couple miles up there, in between here and there. McLeod County did 2 miles right outside of Hutchinson, north of Biscay. They did a couple miles. Actually, that was 3 or 4 miles, I think, this year. So we're definitely with the city of Hutch and some of the towns doing it. The counties are starting to look at it, and it's turning their heads and realizing that some of the products that are there, this could be a better source to preserve them roads for the earlier stages of the road's life.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment then. I hope, because, I, like a lot of people, see a lot of potential in this, and I'd like to see it, like all was manufacturing in Minnesota for jobs. I hope that you're not going to base whether or not you're going to move forward on getting money from the state. It sounds like you're already out there doing the job like a business should do, is promoting your product and marketing it, and I'd like to see that continue regardless of what happens here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. We have Barr, Munson, and Anderson. Representative Barr. Did he leave?
Mr. Chair, he had to step out to visit with somebody, and I have his questions. We can wait for him to come back, or I can. We should turn the speaker down a little bit. It's.
You put it away from your mouth.
Well, I'm way far away.
Still.
He's just so anyway, dynamic.
Yeah.
The other one, see? This didn't happen to anybody else.
While we're figuring that out, let's go to Representative Munson.
Okay. I just had a few questions, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard earlier there were multiple polymers in this product. I understand that it's just from the sheet from the Soybean Growers Association that it's 56%. It's made 56% from soybeans, so that would be 44% from other materials, because I heard polymers earlier, so it's other types of plastics that are involved in this product. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair and the committee.
In the streets that it's going to be used on in Minneapolis, I'm assuming that a lot of these, along these streets, would be drains that go out to our river. Is that, it's not being used in the country, so any runoff from the towns from snow scraping and such, this material that wears off, it would go into the watershed?
Yeah, this product, it penetrates in. Once it's sprayed on, if you get too much in a spot, really you can't even get it to move because it penetrates so fast, so rapid, it goes right into the pavement, and it stays in that top inch and a quarter of the pavement. So, but if there was any two runoff, it's a green friendly product. There's the pH levels and everything are really low in it. Where when you look at some of the alternatives for sealing a street and waterproofing a street and making it last longer, they definitely got more harmful ingredients in them than what this product would. And this product does have 9 different polymers. It's a 15% polymer base. And different polymers, I'm not a chemist, but they add different strength, the way they link the asphalt together in different ways. And keep in mind, you know, as one of the other questions that were asked before, you know, it isn't manufactured in Minnesota right now, but it does use 100 bushels of soybeans per lane mile, basically. So if you do a 24-foot road for a mile on both sides, you're using 200 bushels per mile.
Okay. And I guess it's just the plastics that I'm concerned about, that the other ingredients in the material. But what's the maximum potential saturation? If you were to do as many roads in Minnesota as possible, what would be the most percentage of the roads that you could do without upsetting the soybean market? I mean, what's the maximum you would be targeting your growth?
Who would like to take that question?
Minnesota Soybean would say, do all of the roads and we'll see what the market does.
Yeah, okay.
I'm pretty strong in that answer, but this product isn't put onto the oldest infrastructure in the state. So this is a product that has a natural uptake curve with our construction season and cycle. As new asphalt goes down, the opportunity to apply the product is in that first few years of window. It's like many of the things we're used to, whether it's your personal health. Once there's a problem, it's not the time to think preventative. Roads are very similar in that nature. And so as we lay down new asphalt, we look to preserve and give it longevity at that point. Older infrastructure that is in high quality can still be treated, but it's not a part of the end life cycle of a road. And so as we grow this capability and we see the largest planting in Minnesota's and harvest in the nation, I think the soybean market will see a benefit from the use of this product. With national adoption, hopefully that's a strong benefit.
Okay, and then for recycling the roads, is there any concern about the material being picked up and ground up?
Right, and without getting into the... thank you for the question, and Mr. Chairman and Representative. The polymers in question are in many different categories, and again, without getting into intellectual property components of the element, I'd just like to remind the members and representatives that these polymers can be natural based. So there's many natural polymers in our natural world, whether it's sugar polymers and proteins, etc. And so these polymers that are going in and doing the chemistry have in many respects a natural basis. And to the second component, to the recycling, there's no impact on the recycling of asphalt into the RAP.
Representative Monson.
Thank you.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question, too, and kind of piggybacks off what was just talked about. You know, we're going to B20 with the biodiesel and using a lot of soybean oil. So I realize now this currently is being made in Missouri. But it'd be interesting to talk to the soybean folks and see if our capacity is going to be maxed out on B20 or if we can handle an additional major component of soybean oil. And it's exciting, but just would like to know gallonage, that type of thing, being there using soybean oil, which is the same thing that's going into our B20. And the questions, simple questions from Representative Barr, asking just about the cost per mile to apply this polymer.
Right. Cost. Mr. Van Dyke?
Generally, on a 24-foot county road, you're pretty comparable to the chip seal with the rock and the oil that go down, and you're probably in that $20,000 to $24,000, right in that range per mile. Yep.
Chair Anderson?
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And his last question.
He can answer it.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're on your second question, Representative Barr.
Thank you for indulging my constituents there and myself. Okay, cost per lane mile was
24,000.
Okay, 24K per mile. All right, great. Does this? Do you have any preliminary estimates on how many years, months, days, decades the pavement life is extended by this? And when is a reasonable estimate to get a final report on where this will work best, where it won't work, and what kind of, you know, the overall feasibility of this project?
Mr. Olson.
I would say for the longevity, what I'm seeing is we can probably get 6 or 7 years out of the first application, roughly the same out of the second, maybe a little more. We have never done a third application, but I'm hoping that will push that out. So if we do the math on that, we're talking 18 to 21 years until we would go to a higher level of maintenance. So, and if that's the case, we're going to see some dramatic savings. Because it's right around the same cost as a chip seal, maybe a little less, but there's a lot less effort on the backside of this material relative, instead of a chip seal. You know, now I got all this rock to get rid of, and I got to pick it up, and I got to move it, and pick it out of people's driveways and everything else. So, so there's some cost savings there.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. So currently, if you use the chip seal, you're expected from the time of brand new asphalt to having to completely repave again, you know, tear it up and the new one, I forget what the process is called, but grind it off and put a whole new asphalt layer on. What's the life expectancy of, you know, from start to finish with chip seal and then with this product? I mean, are you getting any more years on the back end that way also?
Right. Our hope is that we can add anywhere between 7 and 14 years on the two cycles. It's yet to be seen. We're about 7 years into this. Real serious look at it on our side, but it's looking promising for that.
President Barr? I don't have anybody else on the list. Is there any other questions or comments? Representative Munson.
Maybe it was mentioned earlier, but has there been a study on braking distance? I imagine chip seal with rock would be a faster way to stop versus wet roads on plastic-coated asphalt.
I would say the skid-resistant tests that have been done will show really no difference between the original pavement and that. Would you get a little bit more on a chip seal? Depending on the chip seal, yes. Most of the communities that I know of, in at least urban areas, when they do a chip seal, they're also putting down a fog seal to lock the rocks in so we don't have it migrating all over the place and getting into places where it doesn't belong. So I don't know what you're getting. You're not gaining as much, obviously, when you're putting another layer of oil on top. But we have had zero issues with skid resistance on the treated sections.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Moss. Hey, is there anybody, Representative Clark?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, when I was working with AURI on this, they asked if my own city's public works folks would be supportive, and I would just like to ask, we have Mr. Ranieri here from the city of Minneapolis, so we could just speak to that briefly.
Yes, thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record and begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the City of Minneapolis. Unfortunately, our public works folks couldn't be here today because they had a public works committee hearing in front of the City Council, and also our public works director, it was her confirmation hearing today. So we apologize for that. But in talking to them, they are willing to do this. They're willing to work on this project with Representative Clark's bill and with the University of Minnesota and with AURI. We do have a variety of streets in the neighborhoods that Representative Clark is talking about. We have some trails, so it will be a pretty good experience, I think, for all of us. Also, we are doing a street reconstruction program, so we may have some new streets in this area, too, that we can work on.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you. I learned a lot today, and I'll convey this back. And also, I think it's important, too, for us, not only is it for infrastructure improvement, it also helps our agricultural economy. And if we can contribute to that, it's a double win or triple win, as Representative Hoppe and Representative Keel talked about. Thank you.
That's nice to hear, coming from someone from Minneapolis as well. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Is there anybody else, or excuse me, any questions for the testifier? No? Thank you so much for being here today. Is there anybody else who would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one making their way up. Representative Clark, any closing comments?
Mr. Chairman, I just would point out there is a letter here from the Neighborhood Association, East Village Improvement Coalition. There's a person here who could testify to that if you want, but maybe I just want to make sure that you know that we're interested. I really do appreciate what Representative Poppe said. This really is a coming together of rural and urban in a way that I think is very gratifying.
That's what we're all about here, right? The committee on, what did you say, Representative Poppe? Win, 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 and win?
Win?
Five wins. We're going to change the name of the committee, Representative Clark.
Oh. Yeah.
All right. So, Representative Clark's, we will hold over House File 2457 as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you. All right. Chair Anderson has an announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief announcement here for members. Republican members of the Ag Policy Committee will meet today at noon in room 454 for a very brief meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other announcements?
Will there be pizza?
No? Hearing none? Once again, it's MS Day on the Hill, everybody. So say hi to our friends wearing orange. With that, we are adjourned.